started now.
Oh, there I am. Good morning. That'll wake you up if the coffee out in the hallway didn't. I have some good news and some bad news. The sign that sat outside of the room today telling you that this was a Windows Azure Services for Windows Server session was wrong. The good news is it's a session about the Windows Azure Pack. We have a much better and much less embarrassing name now. And specifically today, we're going to be taking into a deep dive looking at the websites platform as a service options that are available to you through the new Azure Pack. So along those lines, if you're here wanting to talk about virtual machines or service bus, wrong session, feel free to leave now. You won't offend me. So with that said, let's get going. The first thing is what we've done with websites for Windows Server as a part of the Windows Azure Pack is we build a PaaS for the modern web. We look to do two things for two groups of people here. Number one is we want to provide a powerful self-service platform for developers. And two, we want to provide a flexible hosting solution to IT professionals. These are the two main groups that we thought about as we built this, this solution. As we did that, we had three main pillars or areas of investment in mind. Number one, we wanted to ensure that the platform was scalable, where tenants or customers of the service could easily scale up or out in seconds in a load-balanced, highly available, always up to eight environment in a way that could be scaled across multiple data centers. Number two, we wanted to make sure that the platform was secure. We wanted to have enterprise-grade availability to deliver on high SLAs with support for SSL, both IP and SNI-based, with Active Directory authentication. And then finally, we wanted it to be flexible. We wanted to provide you with web hosting your way with the choice of languages, frameworks, databases, and platforms. So to maybe set some context, I'm actually from the Azure web platform team, and we ship a number of things. The core of what we ship is IIS. This is the web server that's shipped in Windows Server for the last couple decades. And on top of that, we build our public cloud and our partner-hosted or private cloud solutions. As you can see on the left of the screen, we have our private cloud solution. That's websites for Windows Server as a part of the Windows Azure Pack. And on the right side, we have our public cloud solution, which is Windows Azure websites. This is the web PaaS that we've all seen Scott Guthrie demo numerous times. A lot of consistency between the two. In fact, some of the demos I'm going to do for you later today will look quite similar to what you've been able to do in Azure to date with a few cool twists along the way that we're able to implement because we run in the private cloud. The other thing I want to cover is the web solution here. You'll see we're spanning not only the public cloud and the private cloud, but because we do have our core web server that's a server-centric product, we also scale from server to cloud. I think this is something that's quite unique to the Azure web platform that none of our competitors have in the marketplace today. Who is the product for? The Windows Azure Pack, we see three big groups of customers deploying it. Number one are hosting service providers. These are the GoDaddies or the Rackspaces or the OVHs, the Orcs Webs of the world. Number two, we see enterprise central IT, where inside of IT, you're providing a service catalog to your customers where they can purchase websites, databases, virtual machines, and provision them themselves. The other thing that we just kind of stumbled into by accident, I guess, is ISVs, typically in the web space, that are looking to transition to SaaS business models. Or another way that we boil it down is if you have a lot of websites, you have a lot of servers, or you have a lot of tenants, then the Windows Azure Pack and websites for Windows Server may be for you. Cool? Makes sense? When we think about the benefits of websites for Windows Server, we think about five main areas. Number one, it's ready for business. Number two, it's web scale around the world. Number three, we provide the best Visual Studio experience in market. This accelerates time to market, and at the same time, we maintain openness and flexibility while delivering on all of the other promises above. So let's double click into each of these. Ready for business, number one is enterprise grade. The way that we built the website's runtime is it completely de-affinitizes applications from the servers on which they run. What this means is at any given point in time, a server inside of the website's farm can fail, and we continue to maintain availability for your site. This manifests itself in high SLAs for you and your customers. It also decreases support costs because as soon as a server fails, no fire drill required on your part. Number two, it's secure. We have IP-based and SNI-based SSL, as I mentioned earlier, and that's something I'll be able to demo for you here in a little bit. In the Azure service, this was actually the biggest gap that we had in our preview release, and we heard over and over and over again from folks that they wanted SSL for their websites. Makes sense. So we wanted to make sure that we provided that support, not just on single servers, but inside of our private and public cloud solutions. Then finally, we provide access to a number of enterprise services. This, of course, includes Service Bus, virtual machines, SQL Server databases, and MySQL databases. The other thing is, remember, we have Active Directory and other important identity stores that many enterprises look to use when building their applications. We're web scale around the world. Like we were talking about a bit earlier, the environment is inherently load balanced. So every single role, which we'll talk about our role types here in a little bit, is load balanced. It's horizontally scalable. This allows you to, once again, provide that availability, but also scale, 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 scale. We test inside of our labs websites, clouds that individually support in excess of 20,000 websites. Really, there's no platform on the market that, to my knowledge today, that inside of a single farm supports that type of density and that type of scale. And we have this backed up by the way that we run websites inside of Windows Azure. We run it today ourselves in production. Number two, it's always up to date. So we see to it that not only is Windows Server up to date, but the versions of PHP, the versions of Node.js, the versions of MySQL connectors that we use inside of the runtime to provide high levels of application compatibility, we see to it that those are up to date and thoroughly tested to work in the context of the cloud. Number three, scale. We provide many scaling options. Horizontal scalings, where you can define that your application runs across multiple servers, or vertical scaling options, where you say, I would like to run in a single-tenant or a multi-tenant environment, and you can pick, when running in a single-tenant environment, what size of virtual machines your websites are running in. And then finally, it's extremely economical. Because we have unparalleled density on our platform, it's very inexpensive for you to provide these sorts of services to your customers. Somebody's been using this clicker a lot this week. So we want to provide the best Visual Studio experience as well. What does this mean? Number one, we want to make it very easy for people to move existing ASP.NET websites. Number two, we make it very easy to deploy and manage these websites from inside of the Visual Studio integrated development environment. And then number three, we're seeing that as people begin to embrace DevOps scenarios, it's extremely important to have source control integrated into the cloud runtimes. So what we've done is we've invested heavily in integration with source control providers. This includes GitHub, Bitbucket, CodePlex. I'm drawing a blank on the fourth one all of a sudden. We'll see it here in a minute. And then we also allow synchronization with local Git repositories. So we'll demo that here in a bit today as well. Then finally, penultimately, we want to make sure that you're able to bring websites to market faster. You can create websites inside of minutes. I'll show you that here in just a moment. You can do so using your favorite tools. Because we support the most popular publishing protocols in market today, FTP, WebDeploy, and Git, it's very fast and easy to publish websites to the website's cloud. We allow people to deploy with a number of frameworks. So as I mentioned earlier, ASP.NET, Razor, PHP, Node.js, Python, also bring your own fast CGI framework. Really, we have one of the broadest language support matrices available today. And then finally, we also look at continuous delivery. If we have time today, that's our last demo, where you can integrate once again with source control providers for automated deployment, not just to one instance of the private cloud, but even to the private cloud and the public cloud at the exact same time. And then finally, we do this while being open and flexible. We allow you to select your language, as I mentioned a moment ago. We allow you to select your database, so you can provision databases using SQL Server or MySQL, the most common two databases we see in the web app space. Number three is we have the Web App Gallery, which is a curated list of the most popular open source applications on the web. And then finally, we do this in a way where there's zero lock-in. So you can do this, deploying to Windows Azure. You can do it deploying to an instantiation of websites or the Windows Azure pack in your own data center, or you can deploy to a hosting service provider that has deployed the Windows Azure pack. So what's interesting is it's really an awesome manifestation of the cloud OS operating across all three clouds. In fact, the website runtime is so consistent between Azure and Windows Server that we actually ship out of the exact same source depot. So it's actually the exact same code running in the two different places. So what I want to do now is dig into some of the scenarios where we see people will use websites, and then we'll go into demos. And I tell you what, how many people want to see slides versus how many people want to see demos? Let's get hands for slides. Okay, let's get hands for demos. Okay, so I'm going to burn through these really quickly so the marketing people don't kill me, and then we'll do demos. How does that sound? Okay, cool. So global web presence. We realize that a lot of companies, you have to be on the web today, and you have to be on the web in massive scale. So we want to allow you to do that securely, with high scale, and do it reliably. We allow people to use the self-service portal to quickly create their apps from the gallery of the world's most popular web solutions. We make it easy to move websites quickly and easily. We allow you to connect your web app to existing services in Windows Azure, in a partner-hosted cloud, or in a private deployment of the Windows Azure pack. We allow you to deploy and scale your web presence in any region of the world on demand. Okay? We also think about digital marketing campaigns. An example of this would be the TechEd North America site that you've been using all week, I'm sure, to check on sessions and these sorts of things. These are sites that exist for a short period of time to serve a focus in the cloud, or the cloud is perfect for that. We allow you to create engaging customer web applications anywhere that reach any device. You know, remember all these mobile devices that we're carrying around at the end of the day, the language they speak is HTTP and HTTPS. Every web app has a web backend, pretty much. We allow you to design, develop, and deliver experiences that reach your customer that are with rich media and that are highly interactive. You can start from scratch using any of those frameworks that we spoke about earlier, or you can use the Web App Gallery to quickly get started. And then you can scale up or down based on the workload or the load profile that your application is seeing. We also think about business applications. You can harness the full power of .NET, Visual Studio, and Windows Azure Pack to build your modern business applications. You can use Active Directory to federate identity with your on-premises environment, or Office 365 and Azure Active Directory and OrgID to manage access to those applications. You can easily and securely connect to on-premises assets, and you can extend your apps into Office 365 and SharePoint. Then finally, when we think about how we ship the Azure pack to hosting providers and private clouds, we provide this as a white box solution, as you guys have probably seen, and we're going to double click into. You can tap into the largest business application ecosystem in the world. You can easily customize the portal experience and use our billing APIs to actually charge your customers, or in enterprise scenarios, this enables chargeback. You can deliver this as a service on top of Windows Server and System Center. It allows IT to host modern web applications in their private clouds. So, how about some demos, guys? So, this is the portal that you've seen several times today. Notice the consistent look and feel with what we have in Windows Azure. This makes it very easy for your IT pros and your developers to use services that are being provided out of your private cloud or that are being provided out of the public cloud. It's an MVC-based web application sitting over an API layer, and it's built using HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript. So completely standards-based. So the first thing I want to do is show how quickly it is to get started. I'm going to do no-code application deployment. So I'm going to do new website and then from gallery. And what's going to happen is we're going to pull in a feed of applications. These are the most most popular web applications in market today. So .NET Nuke, Umbraco, WordPress, Drupal, Joomla, as well as a lot of the starter templates that we ship inside of our web development tools. They're here for you to deploy with one click. Now, a very common question that I get is, hey, I don't like that list. And I say, hey, no problems. It's very easy for you to customize this list and add or remove applications that you do or do not want to provide to your tenants. And so what we often see is folks might have an internal like CRM or ERP application that they want to provide internally, and so they'll customize the app to do this. So what I'll do is, let's see, gosh, when we think of popular apps on the web, I think we're all familiar with WordPress. So let's deploy WordPress real quickly. This will also illustrate our support for PHP and the MySQL database engine. So let's call this Tech Ed Press. I'm providing my site name. I'm telling it to create a new MySQL database, so our portal is smart enough to detect that this application has a particular database dependency, and then I can specify which subscription I would like to create this app under. I'm going to provide a database name, also specify my subscription. I'm going to provide a set of credentials to connect to the database. And then I'm going to tell it to go. And so what's happening is we're now taking that XML file. Wow. Sorry, I don't know what happened behind us. I guess they're really excited about us deploying this WordPress site. So what's happening is we're going out and we're looking at that XML manifest file and saying, okay, so I have this WordPress package, and we're actually pulling it from the WordPress.org website. Inside of that package, we see a bunch of PHP files that we need to extract and push to the website cloud. We also see that there's a set of DDL and DML scripts that need to be run to provision the MySQL database. We do both of those things, but most importantly, along the way, we execute a set of transforms which wire up the database and the web application to each other so that the developer or the IT pro doesn't really need to mess around with setting connection strings or any of these sorts of things. And so I'm going to click on the link for the website, and we'll see I'm presented with the first-time WordPress initialization experience. So we will do Tech Ed Press. I will enter my password. Hopefully I can type it the same way twice. I'll enter my email address, and by the way, if you should have questions, feel free to use that. And so now I'm going to install WordPress. It's going to complete the initialization process based on the information that I provided. And here in a few moments, you'll see I now have WordPress up and running. So I go right here, I click on my URL again, and bam, WordPress. No code required. Took me, I think, longer to talk about it than it did to actually provision the site. So fast, easy. And a very common app development pattern that we see today. A lot of times people don't always build apps from scratch. They use an existing app like WordPress or any of the other CMSs, .NET Nuke, Umbraco, and then they build on top of those, okay? So my website's up and running. Well, that's great. Now what? A lot of people say, well, I can do that at my hosting service provider today. What's new or what's different? Well, let's say that your website is you're running a promotion or you're running a marketing campaign. You're going to start seeing a lot of traffic, okay? Well, what we do, and you're not going to see it here because it takes a bit of time for the data to propagate, and I just created the site, 15 seconds ago, but we actually track the amount of CPU, bandwidth, memory, disk space that's being consumed by that website and surface it to your tenants. This allows them to make intelligent scaling decisions about their website. You'll see I have this link right here, and I can click scale, and I can very easily move my website from multi-tenant servers or servers that host applications for multiple tenants to single-tenant execution modes. And my demo here is already in the single-tenant execution model. Okay? In addition to that, I can scale horizontally and say, hey, I would like my application to run across 1, 2, or 3 instances. And I can say what size I want those instances to be. So we give you 3 sizes, I guess, like Wendy's or McDonald's, small, medium, or large. In this case, I've been, you know, on Bourbon Street enough this week. I need to stick to the smalls. So we're going to run in a single-tenant environment on 1 small instance. So cool, pretty simple, easy, fast to scale. And it takes effect in seconds. It's very, very fast. There's no content synchronization or anything like that that's going on behind the scenes. Cool? So the next thing I want to show is how well we've integrated it with Visual Studio. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a new website, and I'm just going to do a quick create. This is going to create a blank website. So we will do tech ed VS. I'm going to create the website. And so what you're going to see here, and that was quite quick, once again, very, very fast, is I have the ability right here to download the published profile for the website. What this does is this is a set of metadata that tells Visual Studio how to connect to the website's cloud. And so I'm going to click Save right here. I'm now going to go into Visual Studio, and I don't have a fancy website for you guys today. We're just going to create a new one. And the cool thing is you're going to see how there are really no code changes required for me to quickly create an app in Visual Studio and push it to the cloud. So we will call this website TechEd VS. I'm going to hit OK. And so Visual Studio in the background is going to go through its magic of creating my Razor-based site. So now that it's created, I'm going to right-click, and I'm going to select Publish Website. It's going to ask me for my published profile, which I will now import. There is the published settings. Oh, hold on just a second, guys. I actually downloaded the wrong publishing profile. I apologize. Let me go back to here and download the correct publishing profile. This is what happens, I guess, when you create 2 sites with very similar names. So that's saved. I'm now going to use the correct published settings file. I'm going to hit OK. I'm going to hit Publish. You'll see down at the bottom, it's now building, ackling, and pushing my site live. It now opens the website in my browser, and you'll see there in a few seconds I was very easily able to publish my new site from Visual Studio to the cloud with no code changes necessary. The thing that's pretty cool for me to think about is let's hop in our time machine and go to TechEd, or was it PDC, 2008 when Azure was announced, and you looked at all the code changes that were required to move your app to the cloud. Didn't have to do any of that here. And the other thing is, there are no changes required for any cloud, whether it's public or private. Cool. So that's Visual Studio integration. The last demo that we are going to do before we talk about some of the new features that are in the Windows Azure pack is we're going to do our source control integration. Okay. So what I'm going to do is this is going to leverage Git. Who's familiar with the Git version control system? Okay, a few of you. So Git was actually built, a little bit of irony here, by Linus Torvalds as a way to manage the Linux kernel. It has become now the de facto source control mechanism in the open source community, and we also see it being extremely popular with our web developers. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to make a directory. We'll call it TechEdDemo. I'm going to go into that directory, and then I'm going to initialize. Oh. Yep. Here. I need to do this. Now. It shouldn't. Ah, there we go. Okay, thanks. Sorry about that. Okay, so I'm now going to initialize my Git repository. Great, we initialized an empty one. And now I'm just going to use Notepad to do a quick little, let's do PHP. So I'll do a little bit of coding on the fly. Good morning, tech ed. Cool, and then I'll save it. I'm now going to go back to my command line window, and I am going to add all files to my repository, and then I am going to commit these changes. Cool, so those are committed. I'm now going to go back to my portal, and I'm going to create a new website. I will quit create again, and we'll call this tech ed git. Create this under my website's plan. Took me just a few moments to do that, as you saw. And then I'm going to click this link right here to set up deployment from source control. And so as you'll see, we allow you to deploy from a local Git repository, GitHub, Dropbox, Bitbucket, CodePlex, or an external repository hosted by someone else. In this case, we're going to use a local Git repository. Okay. So it's creating that repository, and what's interesting here is there are these commands that I always need to run that candidly are too long for me to remember, but the portal provides them so that I can easily use them. And so I'm going to select these two commands right here. I'm going to paste them. It's going to, let's see, that should not be doing that. Okay, there's a way for us to fix that. I just need to remove the remote. And then I'm going to re-add it, but without HTTPS. I'm going to enter my credentials. And what it's now going to do is look at the deltas between the repository of, that's local on my machine and the repository that's hosted in the cloud. Once it's determined those differences, it pushes them live, and you will see that asynchronously in the background, we can see my deployment history and that it is now available. So good morning, tech ed. And by the way, the error that you saw a moment ago, what was happening there is our deployment tools verify that the SSL certificate is valid. In this demo environment, we don't have valid SSL certificates, so it was keeping me secure at the expense of my slick demo. But hey, security over cool stuff any day, I guess. So those are the three main ways that we see folks will use and interact with the website service. The interesting thing is all three things I did actually existed in V1 of Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. Just most folks didn't really know about it because we didn't market it super heavily. So if you're really chomping at the bit to try it, you can actually go and download those bits that are generally available. But hey, let's change gears and talk about some of the cool stuff that's available in the new Azure pack, okay? So we'll go back to a few slides to talk about the stuff that we're going to demonstrate. Or actually, before that, let's explain what's happening under the hood. So the first thing is websites was built as a highly distributed runtime. Okay, and what this means is we have different roles that serve different purposes inside of the website's cloud. Things start at our management servers, as you can see in the top left-hand corner. These management servers expose a REST API that is used by the portal for provisioning all of the websites. This is a fully horizontally scalable role to make sure that you can meet, you know, rapid provisioning requests. Okay. These management servers then communicate with our controller role. Our controller actually hosts a modified version of WebFirm Framework. Are any of you familiar with WebFirm Framework? Okay, a couple of you. Okay, so it's a modified version of WebFarm Framework that's been customized so that it actually stores all of its important information into a runtime database. This is a very important thing for us to be able to scale because we're able to shred our configuration, store it in a SQL Server database, and that's much, much more efficient than the traditional flat file XML configuration that IIS uses. Okay. So from there, that runtime database now has all the information that it needs to have to provision websites and also to manage web farm health. And so what I'll do now is I'll kind of walk through the roles from top to bottom that actually are participating in servicing websites requests. So request comes in from the outside world and hits our front ends. These run application request routing and URL rewrite to ensure that we send requests to the right servers. URL rewrite is consulting with our runtime database to find out, hey, how many servers do I need to run this website on? Am I running in a single tenant model or a multi-tenant model? Okay. So once the front end has made those routing decisions, it sends them the request to our web workers. This is where the customer or the tenant application code actually runs. This is running pretty much IIS as you know it today, but what's different is IIS uses what we call the Windows Process Activation Service. Who's familiar with WAS? Okay, so instead of using WAS, we use a new technology called the Dynamic Windows Process Activation Service that allows us to dynamically bind and unbind sites and spin up worker processes accordingly based on the information that's stored in that that runtime database below. Makes sense? In addition, the web worker is also where we're installing all of those stacks. So all the PHP, all of the Node.js, all the Python, all the ASP.NET dependencies you need so that your tenants can deploy applications and they work as they would expect them to. Okay? Below that, we have our file servers, which is where the website content is actually stored. Okay? And typically for highly available scenarios, we'll see that this will be a clustered file server of some descript. Okay? Then the final thing that we have down at the very bottom are our publishers. This is where we host the publishing activities, so our FTP and web deploy services reside there, and they push the content to the file server. So what's important to keep in mind here is a couple of things. Number one is applications can run at any point in time across any of those web workers because, number one, their configuration is stored inside of the runtime database, and number two, their content is stored on the file server, okay? The other thing to keep in mind is all of the roles that you see on that screen are horizontally scalable with the exception of the database file server and controller. Controller doesn't do much, so we just do an active-passive pair on that, okay? And by the way, this is just a typical or an example configuration. In Windows Azure, we run literally thousands of web workers inside of a single website's cloud. Okay? So the question was, how do we handle geographic redundancy or distribution? And what happens is this, as you see here, gets deployed to each geo. Okay? The stamps don't intercommunicate with each other, but what we do have is the ability through some of our source control mechanisms where if you push to one source control repository, the changes are replicated to multiple stamps, okay? Now, the one thing that does bring up one other item, one other thing that's not reflected here is, as many of you know, ARR does not provide layer 3 high availability, and so in most cases, customers will want to run some form of network load balancing or have some sort of upstream load balancer that sits over the top of their front ends as well. So this does not remove the need for hardware load balancers. Okay? Let's see, just to give you an idea of where things are at, you know, we shipped our preview of this in July of 2012 with a beta of October and V1 already RTM'd. So like I said, the stuff we've shown at this point in time, you already have access to. And then our release as a part of the Windows Azure pack will enter preview here anytime. And then the R2 release will happen this calendar year. So finally, what I'm sure you guys have all been waiting for, let's talk about some of the new cool stuff that's in the Azure pack release. Number one is a feature that we call dynamic site hibernation, or sometimes you'll hear this referred to as idle page out. The scenario that we're trying to look at here is balancing site density and performance. So how do I place more sites on a single server while also seeing to it that I don't incur a performance penalty? How many of you are familiar with site timeout in IIS today? Okay, so this is the configuration setting where if a website doesn't receive requests after this point in time, we kill the process, we shut down the process. This has some negative implications in that the next time a request comes in for the site is what we call cold, and so we have to spin up the site, compile the application, so on and so forth from scratch. And this is why sometimes if you have a site that's infrequently accessed, it can take a long time to hit or long time to load randomly. It's because the site has timed out. And so what we've done is we've allowed you to page out the worker process instead of terminating it. And for us to page the process back in, it happens much, much faster than of course the compilation time and these sorts of things. And I tell you what, if you want to see a demo, my peer on the IIS team is demoing this feature tomorrow in MDC B303, where he's going to talk about all the new features that are in core IIS. He has an amazing demo where he has like a couple hundred sites on a single server, and all of them load inside of like a couple seconds. It's absolutely unbelievable, and this is a real game changer when it comes to site density and performance on the Azure web platform. Cool? Next thing, WebSocket support. The scenario is, how do we enable modern web applications? The challenge here is when we look at how the web was originally built, it was built for clients to pull information from the web server. But when we think about more modern application paradigms, what we find is in many cases the server needs to push information to the client. Well, this isn't how HTTP was really built or meant to work, so how do we address that? What our solution is we implemented the WebSockets protocol, which allows us to enable bidirectional communication via HTTP or HTTPS. And so to do that, I have a cool demo. I guess, what's the guy, Dan Brown, he just did the whole book about Dante. So we have a cool demo where we'll actually use WebSockets to push Dante to us over the wire. So I'm going to click browse here, and so you'll see, wait, that looks normal, but what's happening is each of those lines from Dante is actually being pushed from the server to the client asynchronously. So pretty cool, right? Like, there's all sorts of applications for this that immediately come to mind, such as chat or messaging, things such as like real-time stock ticker or any sort of other real-time data feed applications. It's really cool, and one of the things that we think will really reshape the web and how people build web applications in the coming months. Cool? So fun demo there. And actually, if I copy my URL here and I go over into this other web browser, I'm going to fire up my developer tools network. Refresh, and so what we'll see is when I go to WebSockets and look at the frames, you can actually see the individual lines being asynchronously pushed to the browser. So pretty cool stuff there, at least in my mind. We're excited about it. I hope you are too. So that's what things look like there. The next thing is 64-bit worker processes. When we think about enterprise web applications, a lot of times they have a large memory footprint, sometimes beyond that of what 32-bit address space can provide. Right? The solution for addressing this is enabling 64-bit worker processes. But one thing that's interesting is when we think about the web, traditionally it's actually all been 32-bit. Processes. That's kind of the default way that people use it, especially in traditional web hosting environments. And so what we've done is we've allowed you to not only delegate selection of 32 or 64-bit worker processes to your tenant, but you can define this through our plan and add-on authoring experience, which I'll show you here in a little bit. So what does it look like to switch as a tenant between 32 and 64-bit worker processes? I'm going to go back over here, go to my portal, go to my 64-bit app, and I have a very simple app that says, am I 64-bit? And of course, in true Boolean form, the answer is false. Well, I want this application to be 64-bit, so what do? Well, I go into my website's portal, I go to configure, and you'll see here I have an ability to select 32-bit or 64-bit platform. I click 64-bit, I click save, it'll take a few moments for that to update, and then I'll go back here, I will refresh, and you'll see that my application is now 64-bit. Right, so no pulling up IIS Manager, no calling up the IT department, none of that stuff. It's all delegated to the tenant through the service management portal. So pretty simple, pretty straightforward, right? So what's next on our hit list? IPv6. As we all know, we're very, very rapidly depleting the IPv4 address space, and so more and more folks are looking to deploy and implement IPv6. What was the challenge? Well, candidly, for V1, we just ran out of time. And so the way to fix it was just do it. And so what does this look like? Well, it's actually pretty funny because the demo here is quite uneventful. I'm going to go to websites, and I'm going to go to IPv6. I'm going to click browse, and what you're going to see is my site just loaded. Well, that's not very interesting, right? Well, I tell you what, I'm going to copy this. I'm going to use my developer tools. And you'll see I have a little plug-in here that tells me whether or not I access this site via IPv4 or IPv6. You'll see that right here I am accessing the site via IPv6 address, and you'll also see that this just so happens to be hosted and running at SoftLayer, which yesterday was acquired by IBM, it sounds like. So if anybody from SoftLayer is out there, congratulations on that. The other interesting thing is, of course, this site is still accessible via IPv4, so I have a different domain name mapped to this site that's using an IPv4 address, and you'll see it's accessible via both. So it's one of those features where there's work, but when it works well, you don't even know it's there. So pretty sweet. And then finally, we made major, major investments in the way you can author plans and add-ons. What we wanted to do is allow you, the service administrator, to be able to define what services and how much of those services your tenants can consume. At the same time, we wanted to make sure that we could balance bundling of services that make sense to go together with a la carte purchasing options, okay? And so what we did is we came up with a solution that provided a base plan and then allowed people to add or create add-ons, which they could then attach to the base plan. So what does this look like? Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and I'm going to switch over to our service admin portal, okay? And I'm going to go to new, and I'm going to go to plans. I'm going to create plan, and we will call this the Tech Ed Demo Plan. And the first thing that I'm able to do here is I'm able to specify which services in my private cloud are accessible to my tenants. So websites, virtual machines, SQL Server, MySQL, Service Bus, as well. And for the sake of the demo, let's just say we're going to do the website cloud that keeps things simple. Oh, the other thing is for multi-cloud or geographic distribution, you also select inside of the plan which website cloud can be used by tenants consuming this plan, okay? So you might have an East US plan, a West US plan, a Europe plan, an APAC plan. So, in this case, we just have one cloud, and there are no add-ons available yet for this, and so it is now going to go through the process of creating the Tech Ed demo plan. I'm going to search for that, because we do this demo a lot, and I'm now going to dig into the plan. We'll see that nobody has signed up using the plan yet. No shock, because I just created it. And then I'm going to click into Plan Services. And in here, what you'll see is a set of quotas that we allow the service administrator to set. So I can define how much CPU time, how much memory, how much bandwidth, how much disk consumption my tenants can use. I can also define how many sites that they can create, whether or not they can use features like WebSockets, how many concurrent people can access the site, whether or not they can map custom domain names to the site. So very, very large or broad set of things that you can define for your customers. The other thing that's interesting is these quotas are set for those different tiers of service that I configured when I was scaling my website earlier. So I can say that someone that's operating in a shared execution model maybe cannot use a custom domain, and they can only do that when they're using reserved instances. Or same thing with like WebSockets or 64-bit, where there are potential load implications from someone using those more advanced features. Okay? So the other thing that we think about is not just creating the plan itself, but also creating the add-on. Okay? And so one of the most popular things that we hear from our hosting service providers is, hey, I want to be able to give someone websites, but then I want to charge them more for the ability to attach an SSL certificate to that website. Okay? And so what I can do is I can go in to New, and then I'm going to create an add-on, and we'll call this the Tech Ed SSL add-on. Okay? This will be for the website cloud. I'm going to click OK. And so we'll see that my add-on is not configured. I will now go into the add-on, and I can go in here and say, hey, you know what? I want someone to be able to use SSL for both SNI and IPv4 across all execution models. And at that point, it's done. So pretty simple, pretty straightforward. I would need to save and publish the plan. Not going to go through that because that's not really that exciting. Okay. One thing that is interesting is we do have the notion of private plans. And so what this does allow you to do is author a plan that maybe is only available to one specific tenant or one specific customer of yours. Where we find this as being, you know, kind of popular is two scenarios. Number one is in the enterprise where you have a more complex approvals process where you don't just want somebody to come into the portal and sign up for different services. That allows you to, more manually grant access to the services to your tenants. The other thing that we foresee is if you're a hosting service provider and you have one customer in particular that wants to pay you a boatload of money to provide lots and lots of services to them, you can create a plan that's tailored to that specific customer, but that Jim Bob off of the street can't necessarily purchase. Cool. So before we go into related content, I do have two other demos. That I wanted to show you guys today. The first one is IP-based SSL, because this, once again, has been one of the most popular, popularly asked for or requested features from our customers, and so I want to show that to you. I talked too long, so let me log back into the service management portal. Take a few moments to load my my website. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into my website IPSSL. I'm going to go into my configure tab, and I'm going to scroll down. And what we'll see is here we have the UI for uploading certificates. We try to make this very, very simple because certificate upload and mapping traditionally has been a very complicated and sometimes confusing process. Uploading a certificate is as straightforward as providing it with a PFX file, like so, and then providing a password or the secret to decrypt that PFX file. I've already done that. And you'll see that I have a certificate right here with an expiration date way, way out in the future, and here's my thumbprint. Okay? Now, the other thing that I can do, let me save quickly is I can go into my SSL bindings and I am able to choose the domain name for which I want to bind that certificate. I choose the certificate which I want to bind, and then I'm able to specify the SSL mode that I want to use. Now, as we've talked about earlier, we support both SNI-based and IP-based SSL. SNI-based is great because it no longer requires one IP address per SSL certificate inside of the server farm. So this is a big deal when we think about IP address management and also as we think about scarcity of IPv4 addresses. The downside of SNI-based SSL is some of the older browsers still do not support the SNI standard. Pretty much Internet Explorer on XP. So I know that has some fairly broad implications for enterprises running older versions of the Windows operating system. So we also support, for this exact reason, IP-based SSL, which is the traditional way of taking an SSL certificate and binding it for an IP port tuple. Okay? And so to use SNI, I simply set, hey, this domain, this cert, use SNI, and click Save. And it tells me that, hey, I might get billed for that. You know, hey, we spare no expense for our tech ed attendees, so I'll foot the bill for that. And you'll see my site is now being served up through an SNI-based certificate, okay? The other thing I can do is, of course, move to that IP-based SSL mode. Remember, me being able to do this is actually governed by the plans and the add-ons that we were going through and editing and authoring earlier, okay? So I'm going to click IP-based SSL, and I'm going to click Save. It's going to once again warn me that this might cost money. And so it's now moved me to IP-based SSL. And so what's happening in the background is this, is we are going through, and there is an IP address that is being allocated to this website on each of the front-end servers that exists inside of the website cloud. Once we've allocated an IP address, on each of the front ends to the website or to this certificate more specifically, we then take that array of IP addresses and pass it to a PowerShell callback script. You take this PowerShell callback script and then modify it so that it can communicate with your upstream hardware load balancers, because we don't know whether you're using an F5 or a Citrix NetScaler or if you've built your own load balancer using some other technology. We just don't know. And so we leave this to you because you're the expert in that part of your infrastructure. And so if I refresh here, what we'll see is my website should have an IP address assigned to it. Yep, and that's my virtual IP address now for the site with that certificate. So similarly, if I decide that I no longer want any SSL for my website, deprovisioning is just as simple. I click X, I click Save. It's now going to free up that IP address for someone else in the website cloud to use. Okay? So pretty simple, pretty straightforward, but with some pretty cool extensibility hooks underneath to allow you to integrate this into your environment. Okay? So the final demo of the day, I want to show you guys the consistency that we have between Windows Azure and on-premises. And I always do this demo last because it involves talking to private cloud running at SoftLayer, public cloud running at Windows Azure, and a GitHub repository, and it's always the riskiest demo I have of the whole morning. So I put it at the end, so at least you've seen some good demos that work in case something blows up. So hopefully the demo gods will smile upon me this morning. So the first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to create a new website, and we'll call this TechEd3Cloud. Okay, and I'm going to create that underneath this subscription. That's going to create that website. Okay, I'm now also going to pull up my Windows Azure subscription. So I'm going to go to windows.azure.com And I'm betting my session will have timed out because we've been going through all the cool new stuff in the Azure pack. Oh, no, my cookie still works. Great. Give it a few moments to load things up here. And I'm going to create a new website. Quick create. And we'll call this, let's see, what did I call my other one? TechEd3Cloud. And we're going to provision our website in Azure. Okay? The next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go to GitHub and I'm going to create a new repository. New repository. And we'll call this TechEd3Cloud. And I'm going to create repository. Okay, and so now what's happening in the background is GitHub is actually creating, you know, the repository at GitHub, and it now provides me with the URL for doing this. Okay? And so with that done, I am going to now go to my command prompt, and I'm going to do TechEd3Cloud. Okay. I'm now going to initialize this Git repository. I'm going to then go through and we'll do the same thing. Do like Notepad, index, PHP. Confession, guys, I come from the industry, from web hosting. I actually used to work at a company that you may be familiar with, Maximum ASP. And did a lot of PHP work back then. So PHP is kind of my default demo language. So let's see. We'll do, tell you what, how about instead of just echoing something, we'll do PHP info, and we'll echo the PHP configuration on the site. Okay? And so that is saved. I'm now going to add everything in that directory. I'm now going to commit. Now that I've committed, I'm then going to copy this GitHub URL here, and I'm going to, let's see, git remote add GitHub, and then I'm going to paste that URL, and then I'm going to say git push GH master. And that's just saying push the master branch of my repository to GitHub. Now, GitHub works a little bit differently than some of the other Git endpoints do. So it's going to prompt me for a username and my password. And so, of course, now what it's doing is it's going through that same delta and push process where it's pushing those changes live to the GitHub repository. And so if I refresh here, you'll now see that, hey, those changes are now available on GitHub, and I have my little simple application available here. So the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go to websites, I'm going to go to TechEd3Cloud, and then I'm going to set up deployment from source control. You'll see we have the list of source control technologies that we support out of box. So GitHub is one of those. I'm going to click Next. We then reach out and consume the GitHub APIs to find out what repositories exist out on GitHub for my user. You'll see that I have TechEd3Cloud, and so I'm going to click OK. And so now what's going to happen is we're going to pull the latest version of the GitHub repository and pull it into the private cloud. Okay? And that's going to take a few seconds to occur in the background. So while that happens, I'm going to go over here in Azure and do the same thing. And what you're going to see is the experience is the exact same. Okay? I'm going to click on GitHub. I'm going to click Next. I'm going to connect it to the same repository. And I'm going to click OK. And so if we'll see here, of course, it's done publishing that version of my source control repository. If we go over here, it's still going through the deployment process. And the cool thing is we actually even make it easy to see what has gone on and what's happened in the process. And so sometimes, you know, let's face it, stuff does go wrong, especially when we talk about, you know, source control integration, build servers, these sorts of things. And so I can actually view the log of, you know, what we did on the back end to publish the application, okay? So we'll see that my app is now deployed here. And so I will browse, and we'll see I have PHP info running here. I'll go over to Azure. We'll hit browse and PHP info over here. So same app, no code changes deployed from source control, multi-cloud, right? Pretty sweet. Well, what if I decide that I really don't want PHP info being displayed on both of my websites? Well, maybe we just want to do Hello Tech Ed all over again. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to Notepad and I'll edit this. Ready for questions? Since this is our last demo of the day, I'm going to save. I'm going to add all changes. I'm going to and now I'm going to push those changes to GitHub. I'm going to provide it the credentials the same way I did earlier. And so it's now going to once again look at the deltas, push those things to GitHub. If I go over here and then refresh, we'll see that the code is now updated along with my comments. I'm going to go over to Azure. We're going to see that it has picked up that new deployment and has deployed it. Same thing has happened in the private cloud as well. I'm going to browse. We are ready for questions, almost. And then I will browse, and we're ready for questions. So, as you can see, deployed from single source control repository to both the public and the private cloud. At this point, I would encourage you, we do have some great related content. We have the IIS session tomorrow where you can see the awesome dynamic site hibernation demo. And then we also have the Windows Azure websites for a public cloud focus chat, architectural and technical deep dive tomorrow morning as well. So I hope you guys are early risers and we don't have any big parties tonight because, wow, that'd be difficult to make it to. So I want to thank you all very much. And at this point, I'd like to open up the floor to questions. If you can help me out, I always get in trouble because I'm supposed to repeat your questions, and I always forget. So if you can use the microphones when you ask the questions, that will make sure that your question and my fumbling answer is recorded for everyone else to listen to in the future. So questions. No questions? I either did really well or really poorly. Yes, sir.
The infrastructure for the this whole Azure Service Pack is this, the diagram you showed all the different pieces. Is that all virtualized or is that physicals?
So you can virtualize the entire stack. In fact, it's unique in that it's probably one of the first products at Microsoft that's seen more testing on virtual infrastructure than it has on physical infrastructure. Because we ship this both on server and in Azure, Azure of course is fully virtualized. So we kind of get it for free.
So we can take a portion of our private cloud and just assign it, you know, all these server roles you need for this, and then have the portal point to that?
Yes, sir. Yes, in fact, what we've seen a lot of folks doing is they're kicking the tires on it for the first time is maybe they'll just get one or two physical boxes and deploy all of the website roles to those physical boxes.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, you're most welcome. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Microphone, please. I don't want to get in trouble. The presentation police might come after me.
Sorry, where do you configure this private and public cloud? Where is the infrastructure making the private cloud to go and find the system center or wherever you know?
So, gosh, the way I look at it is private cloud versus public cloud is really just a taxonomy issue. It's really a naming thing more than a technology thing. In presentations like this, when I refer or any Microsoft employee refers to public cloud, we're typically talking about Microsoft's operating Windows Azure, right? Anything else that anyone operates, we typically refer to as private cloud, or sometimes we'll call it partner hosted cloud. Okay?
Oh, okay.
And so in this case, we have instantiated a version of the Windows Azure pack built on top of Windows Server and System Center running at SoftLayer.
Oh, okay. 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 Will that be available to the customers so that they can deploy it in their local environment?
So when the Windows Azure pack is made available, then anyone can download it and deploy it to either their own data center or someone else's data center.
So
and
with,
it,
yeah.
Yes.
So with the same portal and everything will be come in that Azure pack, right?
Correct.
Cool. Thanks.
Yes, sir. Oh, you're most welcome. Any other questions? Okay, well, we're ending on time, so I want to thank everyone very much for your participation today. If you have any questions, feel free to come up. I'll be here, or of course, if you want to email me, my email address is ryan.d.jones@microsoft.com. I'm also at Ask the Experts tonight from 5:15 to, I believe, around 6. So feel free to drop by and ask questions, or of course, if you have a question, happy to answer.
You mentioned the Azure pack, once it's released, it'll be available for download. Is there any licensing for it, or is it included for like enterprises that have EAs?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the Windows Azure pack itself actually ships under standalone EULA. We do require, of course, you to license Windows Server. As you saw, we use a database for configuration, so you would need a SQL Server license. And then, of course, if you're using any of the virtual machines capabilities, that requires System Center Virtual Machine Manager, and I believe Orchestrator as well. But there's no additional license or anything like that required for the Windows Azure pack itself. Yes, sir?
Since that'll be a separate download, does that mean that'll be versioned independently of the server software? So as this whole Cloud OS concept evolves, we'll see more of the Windows Azure pack releases. We don't have to wait to like a server 2014, server 2015 type situation.
So that's a difficult question to answer without saying things that we aren't supposed to say about future roadmap. What I can say is we have the ability to release updates to the Windows Azure pack more aggressively than what Windows Server or System Center are able to release of those products. So for example, my team works with a lot of the like largest hosting providers in the world that are, you know, like household names, if you will. And so some of those customers say, hey, Ryan, I need this feature or I can't deploy. And you can bet I'm going to build that feature and I'm going to release a dot release. And I don't have to wait for the other release trains to do that. Okay. Technically, we are what we call an out-of-band release. The answer, I probably even told you more than you wanted to know. Okay, cool. Any other questions? It's your time, guys. So anything else I can answer for you, I'm happy to help. I want to thank you for your attendance today and hope you have a great tech ed. Thanks a bunch. Okay. Oh, here, I have a switch here. Give me just a second.